You're listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.
Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We're the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about bodily functions and the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today, rain, go away. Or actually come into the rain barrels.
And just kind of hang out.
Just hang out until I need you to water my garden.
As the old children's song
just,
goes.
Just like that nursery rhyme.
We are here in the room with Will Vanloo.
Hey there, how's it going?
The real Will Vanu.
Yeah, the real actual life in person.
And
100% organic.
And not that one, but the other one. The real one. The real one.
Yes, live and in person.
We'll talk about
that
later.
This won't actually be live.
Yeah. Recorded and in person.
You're live right now to us.
Right.
But to those listening, it'll be 3 days, 2 days later.
He's live in their hearts, I think.
Aw.
Yeah.
Aaron. For all those who believe.
In the real Van Loo. Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Well, welcome to the week, sir. Welcome to May.
Thank you.
You've got some coffee in a cup, Aaron.
I do. Yeah. I did buy some coffee in a tumbler.
And you're feeling a bit, like, tired, right?
I was dragging ass as I got here.
Because I am feeling tired.
I bet you're feeling more tired than me. I don't really have a specific reason why I should be tired.
I do. Can I tell you why?
Good
Let's hear
segue.
It. Let's hear it. Yeah,
I went bike camping this weekend with a bunch of folks.
Yeah, screw
awesome.
You, buddy.
Yeah.
Adele has been doing all of these bike trips, and by all of them, I mean like the other two that we've done previous, I guess. But she's
been all up on like getting together and like getting things organized on the social media.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Where'd you guys go?
We went to Milo McIver State Park, which is down by Estacada.
Yeah.
It's close to Fearless Brewing, which means we made a stop there on the way, which is awesome.
On the way there or on the way back?
On the way there.
Okay.
Because we came back via Springwater Road, which is like 2 inches wide, and the speed limit's like 100 miles an hour.
Springwater Road.
Yes.
Not the corridor.
Not the corridor.
Not the corridor. It's like an actual road?
It's an actual road.
Huh.
And you're saying a lot of vehicles go really, really fast.
Yeah.
And there's no shoulder.
That's correct. Oh. But we did
it. So did you take the lane?
we did the thing where you ride on the pavement about as far to the right as you can get. I call it Washington State mode.
Oh, okay.
Because I think at least if it hasn't changed, that's what they expect you to do on a bicycle in Washington State. In Oregon, you're legally entitled to take the whole lane. But you can be legally right and dead wrong.
Yeah.
So we took this trip, though, and it was great because the ride itself was pretty short. I think we did like 24 miles from our house out to McIver State Park.
Oh, really? It's that close. I didn't realize.
Yeah, we live like a ways out there now. But it was a nice ride, and we took, I want to say we had 15 people on the
Mother
trip out.
God.
Wow.
And maybe 9 people on the way back or something thereabouts.
Wait, what happened to them?
Well, we left them.
They just decided to stay in the wilderness.
they had a kind of
I've had enough of this
alive
city.
Situation going on there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We have one friend who likes to make the ride out and maybe get a ride back or something like that.
Oh. So all right. Yeah.
I'm holding out hope that someday she will make the trip both ways. And
yeah.
I don't blame her, you know, because for her, 25 miles is a long ways, and I am proud of her for doing it.
Yeah.
And then my friend Billy actually was going to ride out with us, but he had a thing he wanted to do. So he drove his truck, and he was going to drive anyways because he lives up in Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he drove his truck to McIver and then rode his bike like to the halfway point, like to Boring from Estacada.
Oh.
And then he rode back with us. So he did like the full day's ride as well.
Oh, cool.
So, nice.
Yeah. Anyways, it was fun to go out there. And I am tired, not necessarily from the bicycling, although in the heat it was, you know, it's starting to warm up in the spring here in the Northwest. And in the heat it was a little more difficult to push yourself.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But
last time I went bike camping, it was 92 degrees, and
that was a bit of
an effort.
Oh, wow.
But it was to Battleground, so there's the lake there to swim in.
Oh,
so it made it all worth it in the end. But
yeah, that's a good
it
lake.
Was one hell of a ride up there, that's for sure.
And that was the destination of our last bike trip with this group of
people. Oh, terrific.
Yeah. Which, it's a great spot.
Yeah, it is, for sure.
Yeah.
At night, it looks like a planetarium, if you can get down to the lake, because it's like all around you is this tree line, and it kind of looks like you're in OMSI, except, you know, it's the real world. And so it's 1,000 times better, but it's your own private theater of nature. It's pretty fantastic.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't even started drinking yet. And yeah. That's where my mind's at. So.
We got all this beer.
We do. And so I was going to say the reason I'm tired is because we drank a lot.
Sorry.
Yeah. I'm still working on rehydration. Speaking of beer, we should talk about it. First of all, we should say that we have this growler of beer from the Beer Mongers, and we're a big fan of them.
Oh, terrific.
Because they're the ones who hook us up with beverages.
Because they hooked us up with this
beverages.
Growler.
I love Beer Mongers.
Definitely. Why do you love them, Will?
They have an amazing selection of beer. And what else do you need?
That's right.
Yeah.
Really.
It's a great place to hang out in.
Yeah. So I'm a big fan.
It's been really crowded the last few weeks that I've gone by there.
As we said last week?
Yeah.
It's always full. It's always hopping, but there's always a seat for you at Beer Mongers.
Oh.
Yeah. So we thank them for their contributions, and we may have to space this growler out some and come back to it later because, Will, you also brought in some beers.
Yeah. I brought in 3 beers from Rogue Ales that were a gift from a friend, and they're going to be pretty terrific.
Oh, yeah.
So
we have some mugs down here that we can use to pass beers around in. So why don't we hook those up? And you want to tell us about which beers these are?
Yeah, certainly. One of them, here, let me grab the bottles. The first one is a 2014 Portland Rose Festival Ale. I think it's a pale ale, and it's been one that I've enjoyed. There's also, I'm going to need to read the label. Let's see.
Oh, it's got a blue.
This one's a long one. It's a blue bottle, and it's the New Crustacean Barley Wine-ish Imperial IPA Sorta.
Is it? that's the official title.
Really
that's really what it's called. Yeah, it's right there underneath the crab. Yeah, so it's something with hops in it that's kind of barley wine-ish.
That's beautiful.
So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
And then we also have the Beard Beer that was brewed with man's beard, or yeast from
yeast
a man's beard.
Yeah. Cloned from the man's beard. It wasn't like the actual yeast.
Yeah, he didn't just dip his beard in. That would be pretty rad.
Yeah, well, and famously, the cloned yeast because they didn't want to take it wasn't like follicles. They made yeast cultured in this man's beard because he's been the head brewmaster for like 20 years or something.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Which one do we want to start with?
Oh, man. I will leave it up to you.
Let's start with the Beard Beer.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Yeah.
Do you need an opener?
I wonder if I drink the Beard Beer, if my beard will become somewhat more robust. Because that's, many people who know me well know that someday I would love to have restorative beard surgery where they implant extra follicles.
Is that a thing? If that's a thing,
it actually is.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I think there's a guy in Seattle that does it. But also, I'm trying.
The technology's available. There,
there's
right?
hope for me yet.
I'm trying really. Wait. Oh, so are you beard deficient as well?
Yeah. I like to say I have a weird near beard. You know, it's almost facial hair. It's enough that like if I keep it trimmed, it doesn't look ridiculous. But it just goes every which way. If
I
it
think
gets
between
longer.
The two of you, you might have a full beard.
Yeah. We're pretty close.
I was going to say I think yours looks better than mine. So.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can I pass this back to you to stow somewhere, Aaron? Thank you.
I'll just
appreciate
put it right
that.
On ice.
Yeah, so this is very exciting. Thank you, sir, and a cheers to you.
Yes.
And a cheers to the Beer Mongers.
Yes, and to the Beer Mongers,
you know,
for sure.
They're a place you could find these unusual ales.
That's good.
I can feel my beard getting stronger.
Very robust.
Already.
Yeah, a robust flavor.
Aaron, what did you do this week?
Whole lot of nothing.
Yeah? How did that feel?
I really should have something to say.
That's
I just
okay.
Can't,
was
I
it
just
an intentional nothing?
No,
like,
no,
like,
I just... Oh. I just had nothing on
restorative
my docket.
Time.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
The Pugsley is in a house now.
Oh, that's not nothing.
Yeah. It's not being built actively yet.
But it's indoors now?
But it's in, yes. Or, it's out of the box in a house.
Nice.
It's been unboxed.
It's been
Step
unboxed.
Step one. Yes.
Was the unboxing videotaped?
No.
Okay.
That would have been terrific.
I had this idea. I don't know if I said this last week. Maybe I did, so... Forgive me, listeners. I had this idea of taking the bike in the box because it was sitting in the box in the basement of Clever Cycles.
Yeah.
Taking it back in a bob trailer, but then like riding all over the city to various places in the city and like pulling the frame out of the box and getting pictures with the frame. Like, I'm going to ride here with this.
That'd be pretty
and
cool.
And then like, you know, ride somewhere else. I'm going to ride here with this.
That would be pretty cool. It'd be a fun project.
It
I like
be
this
kinda
idea.
Neat. Yeah. it's not too late, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's still there.
It's, yeah, it's indoors.
It's no longer
you.
In the box.
Yeah. Right. Where's the first place you'd take it?
Mount Tabor.
Okay. Yeah. To the
top. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Next to the, what's the guy that's up there, the statue?
John Tabor.
John Tabor. As I recall, that was his name.
John C. Tabor. Esquire.
Yes.
The West Coast.
No,
Tabors.
It's like it's something Scott, right?
That sounds right.
Because for the longest time, I thought it was like Mount Scott.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, right. And so the statue was looking at the actual Mount Scott, which is like south and east some miles.
Right. Right.
I wonder if that's why. Like, did he look at it and like, that's my mountain?
That I'm going to
dibs.
I got up here to get that one over there.
Man.
I kept switching the names of the places.
Oh, sure.
When I was first here, because I got up to the top of Mount Tabor, see the statue of, I don't know, John Scott, and
it's funny, I was like, both have the same first name.
It's just coincidence. Yeah. It's a common first name, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I was like, oh, this must be Mount Scott. And so then I'm living under the actual Mount Scott, like near the actual Mount Scott, and kept calling it Mount Tabor.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, and to add to the confusion, just south of Mount Scott, there's a Mount Talbot.
Oh, there is. Oh,
yeah, which is similar to Tabor in
a
sound.
A little bit.
Damn. Yeah, we have an interesting mix of names on the West Coast. We really do.
Yeah. Well, and then, I mean, there's also every peak probably has like at least two names, because there's what it was called before the white people showed up, and then there's what it was called after. So
yeah, after Scott called dibs.
Right, exactly. And somebody else was like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, you're going to take your Pugsley frame up there.
Yeah.
We want pictures, sir.
Okay,
we
sure.
want proof of this.
I think first I would want to press the headset and get the... what am I saying? The fork mounted. Mm-hmm. And once that's done, it'll make it easier to take it on the Bob trailer.
All right.
That's a good point.
Excellent.
I've got this little quick release thing that is on the Bob trailer, so you can actually stand the frame up.
Oh, yeah.
It holds it
that's really
from
cool.
the fork. You know?
Can you use it to just like pull other bikes, like tow other complete bikes?
Yeah, that's the purpose of it.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
That's really
handy.
You
just take
to have.
The front wheel off and like, you know, tie the front wheel onto the back somewhere, and then you use this quick release vice basically to hold the front fork on, and then
nice.
You just tie the back wheel somewhere on the Bob trailer.
Yeah, I remember when I first got the ability to take a bike with another bike in my life, like gained that ability. Life-changing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's amazing, because then you can take your bike to the bike shop and not have to walk home or drive home or whatever. It's really cool.
And then you don't need your Subaru.
You're right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, at least for that.
Right, yeah. Need it for occasional things.
Do you think the Subaru is like the most common bicycle portaging vehicle?
I certainly see a lot of them in Portland with bikes on the top or the back.
Yeah, I think the bike rack is standard. Like, it's standard on the Subaru, right?
That could be. I don't know.
Yeah, well,
I haven't bought one.
Maybe why everybody's buying them. Yeah, I have no idea.
It's not really.
Well, it's either that or a Volvo. Like, I think those are like the two. Those are the
really?
Two that, I have seen around. Well, historically.
I don't see a lot of Volvo. I mean, I see Volvos in town, but it doesn't seem to be. I mean, Subarus definitely are overwhelming. I see more BMWs than Volvos, I think.
That's right, yeah. Well, those are good for climbing the hills where you park them.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. Until they break down.
Right.
Like,
right. And then what do you do, BMW owner? Come on.
Yeah, take that.
Yep.
Hey, here's a random question that's only tangentially related.
Go for it.
We can edit this out later.
Don't.
Which we probably won't.
Nope.
Yeah.
The term grocery getter.
Oh, yeah.
What does that refer to?
Acquiring groceries at a store. I don't know, what do you mean? Like, grocery getter.
Have you guys never
like
heard this?
I think I've heard some
in reference
refer to like
a
car,
a type
like a
of
station
car.
Wagon, right?
Yeah,
like,
a station wagon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was a regionalism. I said grocery getter in reference to a station wagon, and I got a lot of blank looks the other day.
It's fairly descriptive. I mean, it makes sense.
Because, what is it, Todd the truck driver? He has his bicycle mounted on the back of his
semi-truck. He calls it his grocery getter.
That's his
that
grocery
is true.
Getter.
Yeah. Yes.
And didn't someone in the Boat Month show, somebody had a, they referred to a dinghy as a grocery getter.
Well, there you go. Right, I mean, if you're on a boat, that's how you go to shore.
Yeah. So a smaller thing that you use. So does that mean that the grocery getter car is like it's smaller than your minivan or what's the.
Right.
Okay.
You haul groceries in it, not your children.
All right. But the minivan's big enough to haul both your groceries and your children.
You'd like to think so, wouldn't you?
Depending
on
how many you have.
But you've got all that soccer equipment in the back.
Well, okay. Fair point.
It's multi-purpose, so you can't just like you can't pigeonhole it to one use like you can apparently a station wagon.
A station wagon, yeah. Yeah. Right.
Single use only. This
That's
is my
right.
grocery Subaru. This is my adventuring bike Subaru.
It's good to have multiples.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Parking's cheap in this town, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, just before we get onto the rain barrels, that if anybody listened last week and was curious, because I did not mention the end result of drinking beer through a, was it Red Vines?
Oh.
That sounds terrible.
I thought it came, yeah, I thought it came out, but say it again.
It wasn't that great.
No, it wasn't.
I decided against it. As a good choice.
I don't like red vines in the first place, so like,
right.
I can't see how any good could come of that.
Yeah. I think maybe a red vine, like if you're drinking like some cheap boxed wine through one of those, maybe
I
that would work.
I might be able to get on board with that.
Okay.
I drank coffee this morning through a red vine.
How was that?
didn't really do much.
Okay.
Honestly, like the red vine, it's kind of a strong taste on its own, but when you mix it with anything else, like I didn't taste it at all.
You didn't taste a red vine?
No, the coffee overpowered everything. Yeah. And like last week I had it through the ginger brew.
Okay.
And it didn't really influence the taste at all.
Okay.
It's kind of plasticky too. Like I'm sure not much of it breaks down.
It's true.
I think it's like a somewhat like it's a polymer, right? Like it's an edible polymer. So
I love those.
Yeah. Hey, you know, they're pretty good. That's what soft serve is. Yeah.
Right.
So
delicious. You're right. Soft serve ice cream?
Yeah. I mean, like there's a lot of soft serves that don't have dairy in them. They're,
McDonald's.
Yeah, it's a polymer. I mean, that's a wide class of chemicals. We just, they don't put that on the marketing material.
Right.
Who likes polymers for dessert?
I do.
Well, let's talk about your rain barrels.
Yeah,
speaking of polymers.
Hey, there you go.
What are they made of?
Yeah, they're made of polymers.
They're made
too.
Of dessert. They're
less
delicious.
But I have some rain barrels in my house.
Yeah.
And it's been a really fantastic thing. I bought a house a couple years ago, and that was one of the first projects we took on was putting in some rain barrels, and the system sort of grew. And I think I surprise folks when they come around the corner of my backyard and see 9 rain barrels. But
are there 9?
There's 9 in the back,
okay.
There's 4 in the front, and there's 2 in the greenhouse.
There we go. 9 in the back, 4 in the front.
And I was just talking to my wife this week about the fact that I want to upgrade the capacity of them a bit. So
okay.
There's some water storage cubes that I want to, because you get so much rain here, it's free and just shows up at your house. And so like, why not take advantage of that? And
it's like it comes out of the sky somehow.
Yeah, as if by magic. I think it has something to do. Well, I don't know.
Convection.
We don't need to go there. Yeah, convection. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a thing. And maybe this is actually timely because I've been hearing a lot. I haven't listened to it yet, but there's a Fresh Air episode on my podcast list of things to listen to about California's water shortage crisis.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I don't. We're not exactly flush with rain right now ourselves.
We are not.
So I believe, are we technically in a drought, or are we just in a dry spell?
Portland proper has not declared drought, but
okay.
There's a number of areas south of Portland that
are saying
like 4 years.
Wow.
It's been considered drought.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I have some friends in Ashland who have said it's been quite a while since they've felt like it's been a wet year and, not a lot of snow this year. So, I mean, you really got to, even though it's, even if you had just one rain barrel, you're saving, 50 gallons of water when you're watering your yard, like little dents here and there, That's a nice thing because you can start small and scale up and just save yourself money along the way.
Right. So maybe we should start with the philosophy. Why do you have rain barrels? Will Vanley, why do you have rain barrels?
It's just a long-term investment, right? Like, I'm going to live
in
this place
for a while.
I'm
sorry, my tone was off.
No, it's good. I think it's great all around because the city of Portland is actually really fantastic that they give you money off your utility bills. So that right there is a pretty fantastic thing because there's actually some cities around the country that have made it illegal to put up rain barrels.
Really?
Say what?
Yeah, so there's some jurisdictions that where there's water rights, and the water rights state that the people who have the water rights get the water that falls in a certain like watershed. I don't know
so
exactly
like,
how they
say,
divide it up.
Say city water rights? Or
yeah, basically, because like the city or sometimes private companies have rights to water in an area, and so you're technically like by their account stealing
their water
because they're using it. There's some sort of contract, right? It's not super common, but most places ignore it. But Portland actually encourages it because we have our trouble with stormwater, so I get money off my utility bills. That's an easy one, so it pays for itself. I also, like I said earlier, I'm just lazy, and it's nice to have water there that I can use. And it's a great way to, if you elevate the rain barrels a little bit, I've been able to do a drip water system in my yard that's gravity fed, so I don't have to mess with pumps or sprinkler systems or anything like that. I just put a tube in the ground. And it's kind of fun, you know, it's a little project. So
yeah.
It's good for the environment too. I'm getting all climate paranoid that, you know, the world's going to end like in Interstellar or something, the crops are going to die. So my little like tilting at windmills, flailing against the world falling apart. But
yeah,
there's that too. But
well, imagine a world without any okra.
Yeah, I know. It would be terrible.
Yeah, that was, I think, someone tore Interstellar apart for that. That, like, you know, the okra is going to be gone. And nobody cares about okra as the joke,
oh,
I guess.
But, yeah, right. Yeah.
Personally, I like
not
it.
Not the greatest, most. That's the point, though, is okra is like the kind of the gross vegetable, and that's all they could grow.
That's everybody. What they had left.
Yeah, that's
yeah. At one point.
So take
a
that,
last
people.
Resort, okra.
All you're gonna have.
Resort.
All you're gonna have is okra. Yeah. That's it.
That's motivation
this
enough
is
to
your
putting
future.
In rainbows right there.
Just a little fuzzy pickle.
Yeah. You know, but instead with this system that sort of maintains itself, I can just flip a switch, water a bunch of garden beds around my house, and I mean, I'm not growing okra, but like I've got fresh kale and lettuce and things. And the rain barrels in my greenhouse have helped maintain the temperature through the winter, too. So I have the ones in there are black. They work as kind of a heat sink, and the water maintains the temperature a little bit. If you have cold-sensitive plants, you just put them on top of the rain barrels, and they stay warmer in the winter. So
it's, I'll be damned.
It, in like a little way, like, you know, in like the big picture, it's like helping the environment a little bit to do this. But it's helping me in the short term because I get, you know, like a better garden. It's easier to manage, so more delicious food, so.
Yeah, I'm curious. Well, you're using this first of all for like yard maintenance and watering your lawns. Is there any practical way that you could use this water for drinking?
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Okay,
it's actually not too tough of a system to set up. I was in Hawaii and was at house that is built on lava, and it's hard to put sewer systems and plumbing through lava.
There are many houses that are like
catchment systems. Yeah, they're pretty cool, and it's about $4,000 is what they said to set up the system from nothing, which in the scale of like home renovation projects, if you're comparing it to like putting in a sewer line, that's, you know, right in the ballpark of what you'd pay to dig a sewer line somewhere else, I think, like give or take, depending on what you're doing.
Yeah.
and so then you have an independent source of water, you know, and it's not, it's actually cleaner than municipal water. You can use a UV filter. So you have a couple like physical barriers that get a lot of the particulates out, any of the germs that are like 5 microns or bigger. And, or whatever is 5 microns or bigger. I have no idea. And then it runs it through a UV filter at the end, which it, without chemicals, cleans the water cleaner than municipal water.
Oh.
You just can't do that at scale. You can't, like with the thicker pipes, you just can't beam light through it enough, you know, like in enough concentration to do it. So it's, I mean, it's something that's very much in reach, I think, for a lot of people that don't really realize it. So,
yeah.
I mean, and it fits in like the space of a fridge. It's like the floor plan of a fridge. It's a compressor and some filters and stuff. So it's small. And I think with a little basic plumbing knowledge, you can have a backup. I mean, we've had, it's, you know, if I want to get back into the paranoid climate stuff, like we've had 3 boil water notices since I've lived in the metro area for the last 7 or 8 years, 2 in Tigard when I lived out there and 1 in here. And, you know, like that for a couple of days, like if you had your own filter, you wouldn't have to do anything. Like you wouldn't matter. So, you know, and a cistern, you know, a big 10,000 gallon cistern isn't that huge if you're putting a patio over it or something. So
how big is a 10,000 gallon cistern?
Like, it's like a big swimming pool.
Okay.
Like one of the, I think it's one of those like blow up pool sizes, roughly give or take.
Okay.
I'm sure,
like 12
I'm
feet across or
that,
something like that.
Yeah.
3 feet high.
You can fit in it like a big yard.
Okay.
Or like, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I did actually some fun calculations about how much water you get every year, too, on like Portland houses and stuff.
Yeah.
So I just measured a couple of roof lines of like some of those, you know, older houses in town. I just picked a couple of random ones. And so the math works out in an average year on a small house that I measured. Let's see. It's 30 by 35 feet roughly for the roof. You end up getting 27,000 gallons of water, a little over 27,000 gallons of water a year. And on a bigger house, you're getting, that's like 30 by 70, you're getting 55,000 gallons of water a year.
That's a lot of gallons of water.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's why I'm thinking about upgrading my storage, because 1 inch of rain can fill up a 50 gallon drum in no time.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the longer you can hold it for, I mean, if you could maintain this supply of water when it's raining really hard, you know, the longer you can work through the summer when you're watering with stuff.
Yeah,
there was kind of something that we had in our house. We have a couple of water barrels.
Yeah.
but one of the problems that we ran into, because it was just, you know, coming off our downspouts off our gutters,
yeah,
is that the days when it was raining really hard, they would just overflow. And
totally.
And, like, we had nowhere to put it. And we were just thinking, like, look at all this water that, like, we're wasting.
Right,
we don't have anything to do with.
I've actually seen some diverters where you drill a hole in your downspout and put, like, a little insert into it that catches some of the water but will let it flow over inside the downspout still. I haven't used any of those myself, but it seems like a good option for that when you have a smaller system.
Sure.
Or just, like, a tube, you know, into the right spot off the top of the barrel, so... I mean, it's pretty fun because you can go to a scrap yard and buy some barrels and just sort of start from scratch and make it however you want to fit your yard. So,
yeah. And that was maybe my next question was like, where do people get these materials, and can they be gotten for free? Can they be gotten for cheap?
I'm sure if you can. I mean, if you can find, you basically need a barrel or some sort of container, and then you need something to divert the water into it, and you need something to drain the water out of it. So there's I love the hardware store that I go to in my neighborhood, but the folks there, I just don't think they were thinking imaginatively about, they weren't using their imagination about how to build rain barrels. Cause I asked them if they had rain barrel gear and they said no, but then later, like walking around the store, they have spigots, they have bulkhead fittings and they have garbage cans, and there you go.
They got everything.
They have everything. And that's, you know, for, I think under, $30, $40, you'd have a functional rain barrel, like a small one that you could use, just garbage can and some fittings and stuff. But there's some places in town you can find on Craigslist that deal in used food-grade containers. So it was the weirdest thing when I showed up to this junkyard. I drove up and all these big drums were stacked up, and on the side were written my initials, WDV. And I was like, what the heck? Like
they were waiting.
They knew
for
I was coming. This is weird. Are they time lords? How does this work? But so what it was is it was white distilled vinegar that was in them, and so it was just like the ones that were marked. So it's like vinegar and oil and things like that. They were in the barrels, and so you know you can bring those home. And those food grade ones, if I'm remembering right, were like $30 a piece, I think.
Okay.
So and it's they're nice. I mean, you can get a lot of the bulkheads. I actually think they're called bungholes, but the things at the top
are.
Of the barrels, it's, you know, a legitimate time when you can say bung.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. But the bung in the top is a standard fitting. So you can get a lot of other plumbing pieces and then like find some sort of like cone. I basically built a cone out of random plumbing fittings that my downspout diverts into. So
very nice.
Yeah.
So it's not, it's just a cone. Like you basically remove the downspouts, or you shorten the downspouts.
Yeah, so I cut off the downspouts. I played around with some rain chains, but they didn't work out.
What's a rain chain?
You stick a chain down through, or like some solid piece that the rain is supposed to drip down. But if you have a lot of water, it's just going to splash everywhere. And I mean, if it's an amateur installation like mine was, but you know, I just diverted the downspout with one of the downspout extenders. So they're like the flexible kind of child's toy looking things that you normally divert water away from a house. But I just cut off my downspout, stuck that diverter over to the rain barrel and zip tied it on. So
gotcha.
It looks a lot better than I'm describing. I use some colors that match and things like that.
Sure.
So it doesn't look like I just sawed up my house, but it actually worked out. It's my wife approved of the look. So, you know.
Yeah. And I was over there. I was helping you getting, you had some old sod, I believe, that you were trying to get rid of.
Lots of dirt.
And I was over there and I saw this, and your setup is absolutely fantastic.
Thank you.
It can be done.
It means a lot.
It can be done really well.
Yeah. And it can be done on the cheap and, you know, on your own. So if you're willing to put in some work, it ends up being a lot easier than like paying somebody to do it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Did we say like how long could you last if there was a water apocalypse?
Oh, me personally?
Yeah.
I think a few weeks. I can't remember. I should have looked that up, but what it says, I think it's like a gallon of water per person per day.
Per day.
Yeah. Oh, right.
So it depends on how many, you know, are you helping out your neighbors? And is it just you? You know, because they're going to see that you got rain barrels, so you don't want to be a jerk and like, sorry, buddy, this is mine. But, you know, so you have a 50-gallon drum, you have five people, you could go 10 days. Right?
There we go.
If you're conservative, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all right,
cut back in the showers, just use it for drinking water, boil it up.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
Kind of like when you're camping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's just like that. We actually, I have a backpacking water filter that I got going backpacking, but I have it, you know, with my fire extinguisher and tools and like emergency gear because, you know, if I need to, that would go a long way to make me feel better about my rain barrels. You
right,
know,
right.
I drink them. So,
So I guess it just makes me think that if people haven't gone camping yet, I know not everybody's like a camping fan. Like, not everybody goes out and sleeps in the woods just for fun. And maybe, I don't know, maybe it's not fun to everybody. I don't understand why not, because I love sleeping on dirt.
Yeah, because it's amazing.
But, yeah, I was not a fan of camping when I was a kid.
Oh,
but
sure.
I hated being in the dirt. It took my wife to convince me to go camping, and now I'm totally sold on it. But, yeah, ask her sometime about how averse I was to it.
Oh, yeah, totally.
There was I would not go camping unless it was, like, no threat of rain in the forecast.
Yeah.
And then when we got married, the deal was I would go camping if we would get a tent that I could stand up in.
Because
then I thought it would be enough, like, indoors that I could get by.
There we go.
But, and as a result, I have this fantastic huge tent, which is really cool. But, yeah, we go camping all the time, and I love it.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was just thinking that if people don't have the camping skills yet, if you're at all concerned about, like, what might happen if, you know, if anything changes in our delicate financial and ecological system, going camping is a good way to figure out how well you would fare if someday the utilities shut off. So, yeah, I recommend it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's like
it's
the whole
thing. It's not so bad. Yeah.
No, it's not. And you find out, like, I am not a big fan of being gross. And I just, I got a taste for that yesterday when it was like, what was it, like 82 or something like that at the
hike.
So warmer than it's been in Portland for a while, and bicycling through the, you know, through all this, and having, I think I wore a long sleeve shirt the entire day because I felt like, oh, hey, I got to keep myself from getting sunburnt and have cloth and things. Oh, yes, please. I'll have more beard beer. It's really fantastic.
Didn't mean to interrupt, but
no, not at all. It's just the idea that if you're not used to getting dirty, if you're used to having two showers a day, maybe like cut back to one. If you're used to having a 10-minute shower, cut back to a 5-minute shower. See how it feels.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are a lot of ways that you can use less water and still feel reasonably clean. So.
Yeah, you can ease into it. And the nice thing is that every little bit makes a difference anyway, right? Like, people feel like it's kind of futile sometimes because they can't change the whole thing. But it does make a difference, like, if you just cut back on water a little bit, put a brick in your toilet or whatever you do.
Sure.
You
know? Right.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't done the brick in the toilet yet, but for anybody who's not aware, the brick in the toilet is the idea that, especially if you have an old toilet like mine, I don't think it's a water saver or anything, so it's like 3 gallons per flush. You don't need all that to wash your shit down the drain. You can actually do it with far less water. So if you displace some of the water to the point where
the tank gets fuller quicker.
Yeah, the float sensor will cut off when it's full of like 1 gallon rather than when it's full of 3. So that's also a good thing you can try.
You know, they make bricks just for that.
Do they?
Like, yeah, really? Tank bricks. Yeah, because the old like masonry bricks will break down in water if you leave them saturated long enough. And so then you can get like you know, like little cruddy particles in your toilet, which
would scour your bowl over time.
But they're like heavier, like foam rubber or something like that, and like sealed real well and still really dense or something. Maybe not foam rubber, that would float.
One thing that was suggested in a emergency preparedness class I took was to get, like, there are bags of, like, water containers or whatever, fill those up and, like, store those in your tanks.
Yeah.
And that's great and all, but then I thought, like, how long is that water going to sit there before you use it? Because I forget about it. And then, and then you got, like, this old, like, 10-year-old toilet water hanging out.
But it was clean when it went in, right?
Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah, the tank is clean. I mean, the way it works, like, it's always clean.
It's still.
Theoretically.
Yeah. The association.
Theoretically, yeah. Well, we were talking about bodily functions earlier.
We could
keep going on this thought about water and conservation.
Yeah.
I actually recently started experimenting with a composting toilet.
Ah.
Which is a really fascinating thing. For real, man. Yeah.
Wait,
maybe we should clarify, you're experimenting with the idea of a composting toilet.
I built
for
one.
Legal
I
reasons.
No, I have it in my house. I have one in my house. I built one. And
legal reasons, do we need to differentiate?
It's not illegal.
It's not.
No, it's totally not illegal. Right. You can't just like dump it on somebody's lawn then. Like, you have to manage it. Like, anything, right? Like, it'd
be
waste.
Illegal if you were just dumping it out.
Like, if I just dumped it out on my neighbor's lawn, that's totally illegal. But, like, or like in my yard, that would be terrible.
Yeah.
It'd be disgusting.
Yeah.
But, no, you can actually manage it. There's a great book called The Humanure Handbook.
Okay.
And it really breaks it down, and it's not as hard as you think.
Oh, so, that's great.
Yeah, it's literally a bucket with a seat on top.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read a lot of stuff, you know, that says the mechanical ones that have, like, a container and, like, a stirrer, so, like, it keeps it more contained. You don't have to interact with it as much. I'm talking about poop.
Yeah, yep.
The, you know, they're as much maintenance anyway. Like, you still got to empty them at some point.
Right.
So you're just paying a lot of money for something, and you still have to handle shit. So,
do you want a fancy cat box or just a regular cat box?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it works. It's very functional.
Oh.
It doesn't smell bad at all.
Yeah.
You just cover your material with other material. You cover it with
sawdust or something?
Sawdust. I got some cedar shavings from the garden store. But I've heard also coffee husks work really well, like the shell that they
coffee
blow up.
husks.
Yeah, from the beans. And so I've been wanting to go to some of the coffee roasters.
Pal up with your local roaster.
That's what I think. And some folks swear by it. And then it just smells like your bathroom smells like coffee or cedar. So
I can't complain about that.
I have this in the room next to our bedroom, and it's been a couple weeks, and it's going well. And I'm surprised at how not terrible it is.
There we go. Yeah,
that is amazing.
Yeah. So not legal in all areas.
I think
I had
maybe,
an experience
but
with human manure composting.
Oh, did you? Do you really?
Not nearly as pleasant.
I'm really into it, so it may go south at some point. This is all an experiment. But what happened to you?
Well. So these were some friends of friends, like when I first arrived here in Portland, and we were going to stay with them for a little while until we, you know, got our shit together.
Yeah.
And
ba-doom.
As it were.
And as soon as I got in the house, like without any prompting or anything, like something was off. I was like, something is wrong here. Like my nose.
Oh, interesting.
Like. And it wasn't like the house smelled like shit, but it smelled off.
Yeah.
Something was wrong. And it wasn't until like...
It may have just been there cooking even been the toilet. You know?
Well, maybe.
No? Okay.
It was a constant is the thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Okay.
And we were like there for 5 minutes and, you know, they introduced us to the concept of human manure composting. They're like... You don't have to. You're guests here. You do whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
But just to let you know, this is what we're doing in our house, and you're invited to partake as well.
And you should feel really guilty if you don't.
Well, yeah. Yeah, every time like I flushed the toilet, I was like that pang of guilt.
You could just picture him like staring at you, glaring at you from through the door. Well, you know, I'm in a house with only one toilet, right? And then, like, we have only one bathroom, like a lot of old houses. And so
that's the thing. There was a total of 8 of us at that point.
Totally. Even with 3 people in our household, sometimes the bathroom's occupied when you don't want it to be. Right. So,
true.
You know, and we have our bedrooms in the attic, and, you know, it's a different floor. It's nice to have facilities up there.
Yeah.
So it's an experiment. I'll let you know. You'll have to come over. I shouldn't have told you about it. I should have just had you come over and asked you how you thought the house smelled. But actually, I didn't have the toilet set up at the time, but I remember you did say I had a nice smelling house.
You do?
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's incense, you know.
You said Nag Champa, right?
Yeah. Nag Champa. Very good.
It's super, super good smelling.
Yeah.
Well, and it's the sort of thing that's like, it's a distinctive smell, but it's also not like it's not cloying. It's not heavy. It's just like it's a faint, it's a signature.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, this is my house.
Well, I know a lot of other people that use it too, you know, mass produced and all, but it's very good. Thanks for letting me claim Nag Champa.
Of course. I believe you invented it, if I'm not mistaken.
No, my real last name is Nag Champa.
There we go.
Will Nag Champa.
Will Nag Champa Van Loo.
Other cool things you do, just to mention before we wrap up, you make your own beer.
I have not in a few years, but I have, I have some gear, and I've been thinking about gearing up again, but getting going. It's a lot of fun.
Didn't we have your homemade beer when I was over to move some of your stuff?
You did, yeah. Okay. I have some still left around, so that's a nice thing is that you can kind of brew with a purpose and make some long-lived beer. So
it was super tasty.
Thanks.
So, well done.
How does it age? Like, does it age at all? Like, do you notice a difference?
There's definitely, like, darker malts. I found, at least when I was brewing, tended to age better, and then when you hop stuff more, it tends to age better, and that's just, you know, that's why IPAs are really hoppy, because Brits wanted to, you know, take it on
journey,
India, and so if you have like a really dark hoppy beer, which I happen to like that, you know, you can have it around. We have a fairly heavily hopped. I think we had a cherry porter that we made back in 2009 when you came over.
That
was
sounds lovely. I don't remember that. I think it was a lighter. I want to say it was.
Oh, we had
like
some of those too.
Was there a half?
Yeah, we had a half too.
Okay.
But yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, so. But tasty anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Thanks for doing this.
Oh yeah.
And in other DIY things, there's the recycled pallet furniture.
Yes, yeah. So, I had some, there's a lot of spare pallets around town, and I needed some furniture in my yard. So, and actually, I copied this idea from my neighbor. I can't take credit for the idea, but he had built some chairs out of pallets, and it's pretty easy to break them down and just make little Adirondack chairs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. They turn out looking really nice. And
how are they holding up, like... Are they pretty sturdy?
Oh, yeah, they're really sturdy. The ones I made, I didn't finish them because I was just sort of testing the design, like my interpretation of it. But my neighbors sanded them down real good and then covered them in linseed oil. And they have been outdoors like for a whole year now and like over the winter and everything. And they're going to re-oil them this spring, but they've held up great.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And you can find a pallet just about anywhere. Like if you know where our warehouse is, there's probably a pallet that they don't want that you can have.
Oh, yeah. There's dumpsters full of them over all over Southeast Portland.
Yeah.
I recently gave up, it used to be that every time I passed by a pallet that was in good condition or I saw some wood, I was like, oh, I should come back and get that. But I just gave up on that impulse because there's always pallets everywhere in this town.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of like me with old boxes of street cart food. Like,
yeah.
Just, you know, every time you see one, you're like, oh, wait, maybe there's like half a hamburger in there. But
maybe.
Yeah. But I gave up on that too for other reasons.
Yes.
No, I was just going to say that Adele, my wife, got really inspired, I think, after she saw a picture of the ones that you had built.
Oh,
and so
cool.
She was like, oh, I bet I could do some of that. And so she ended up building a coffee table out of a pallet wood.
Fantastic. I would love to see a picture of that sometime.
Yeah, I think there is one online right now. I'll find it for you.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. But this is another thing. It's just like it kind of like the rain barrels where there's a ton of water falling on, well, depending on where you live, but here in Portland especially, there's a ton of water falling that you could have for free.
Yeah.
There's a ton of pallets out there you could have for free. The supplies to make beer are cheap.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you could boil your rain barrel water and treat it and then use it in your beer. Yeah, if you wanted to. Right?
With yeast cultured from your own beard.
You absolutely could, yeah.
That's right.
Artisanal, organic, humanely raised beer.
That's it. And so in the time I was at your house, this was also it was a work trade party. Basically, it was like, you're going to need my help someday doing something, but would you help me? You
know, I
would gladly pay you today for tomorrow for a hamburger I would have today or something like that.
So what are we doing at your house?
Well, it's a good question. I'll let you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cause I know some other friends of ours, they're going to tear down their chimney and I am really excited to go help with that.
Right.
So that'll be a hell of a
lot
of fun.
That sounds like a fun job.
Yeah. Especially in somebody else's house.
So this is just this is another thing where it's like, you can live kind of on the cheap. If you have a good network, a good, good connections with people, you need stuff done, you get in touch and say, hey, I need some help and I will return the favor when it's necessary or appropriate.
Totally.
So. Yeah. Anyways, I like your ethics, sir.
Thank you.
That's
good
stuff.
Thank you very much.
Do you have anything you'd like to promote? Would you like to promote your Twitter account?
I am on Twitter at Real Van Lou. At Van Lou. I have a Twitter account, and I post crazy sounding things about the road. I look like a crazy old man yelling at children on my lawn on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, yeah. If that's your thing, follow me on Twitter.
There we go. What is the deal with the fake Twitter account?
Oh, well, I think somebody was seemingly objecting to me reporting illegally parked cars, and so they made a fake Twitter account to parody me. And they used some really,
really
terrible,
homophobic,
misogynist sort of bullshit. So, which made it easy to differentiate from my normally relatively calm demeanor.
And that's the thing. That's the thing is like...
my Twitter account is so boring. It was immediately apparent that anything stimulating was not me writing it.
Right.
But that was just silly. And actually, they put some graffiti on a newspaper box.
Oh.
Repeating one of the slurs from the Twitter account ended up on some papers posted on a newspaper box for a couple weeks. So
and did they just
funny.
Did they just like tag it like you know from the Real Van Lou or?
Oh, it had my name on it.
Oh, okay.
So like it was really surreal. But like somebody was really upset about me getting upset about illegally parked cars.
Right.
Which is like what they mentioned, but you know, it was cool. I was able to like use it to get some attention to get people to drive some donations to some local charities. So like that was pretty rad, Bradley Angle. So, good came out of it. It was actually kind of fun because I heard from a lot of friends who I hadn't talked to in a while and they're like, hey man, I hope you're doing all right. I heard this asshole was bothering you. Sorry about that. But it was like a good way to get in touch and, you know, so it was, I think it upset other people more than it upset me sometimes, but and again, sorry about that.
Ain't no thing.
You were able to steer into the skid.
It happens. I've never written anything on the internet that hasn't gotten some hate, like some shade thrown at it from somebody. So like, it's just the internet. I think
it's hilarious though. Like
10% of it is going to be that.
I read your Twitter, your tweets and
you must have a lot of free time.
I do. They're informative, but they don't seem all that controversial to me.
I didn't think so. Like, I really think I'm pretty boring.
Yeah.
somebody was really passionate about it, apparently.
Man, somebody really liked to park their car wherever they wanted.
That's right.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised at how many people love to park illegally.
It's a great thing. Like, the city of Portland, that's one of the best things that app is for, is that you can report a illegally parked car. Like, if it's in front of your driveway, just... put it on the app on your smartphone, PDX Reporter app, Android and iOS. I don't know why the city doesn't talk about this more. But then parking enforcement shows up, and we'll give them a ticket and probably get them out of the way of your driveway. Like, it's just a nice thing to have.
It's one more thing you can get for free in this town.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Parking satisfaction.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. Well, let's do some news and mail, right? I would like to do mail, and you would like to do news. And perhaps you and I would like the opposite things as well.
Can we do them both at the same
time? Let's do the same things.
I'll read the headlines and you read the mail, but we'll do it both.
We'll split it to left and right channel.
While you're working on that, should I open another beer?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Can I borrow the opener?
Oh, right. You got yours? Okay. We have multiple openers and none of them are accessible. But now it's been fixed. All right. Here comes your headlines.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike. It's fast.
By the way, this is a really good barley wine-ish thing.
Yeah, it's really good.
Barley wine-ish.
Yeah.
Yes. So, first up, how the microtransit movement is changing urban mobility. Much like the U.S. political system, American urban mobility has traditionally been dominated by two parties, private cars, or cabs, and public transportation. But lately, residents of America's largest cities have no doubt noticed lots of new options that seem to fall somewhere in between. Microtransit, more micro than a fixed route 40-foot bus or a metro rail system, and more transit than, well, not transit. Strictly speaking, there's nothing new about microtransit. Informal ride-sharing networks like New York's Dollar Vans have operated for years, while city agencies run paratransit services for people with disabilities, often at a great... It should be financial loss, by the way. But better data on mobility patterns and wide smartphone access have made flexible on-demand transit more possible than ever. Social trends towards city living and away from car ownership have also fanned the current flame. The longer cities wait to address the rise of microtransit, the harder it becomes to implement the type of coordination or regulation key to any strong mobility network. See Uber.
Like in Portland.
Right.
Yeah.
Flexible transit companies will join the conversation there's something missing here. But anyways,
There's a guy.
Yeah, there's this guy who says, like, flexible transit companies to join the conversation would question any service that didn't want to operate as part of the larger transit system. And so this leaves me a little bit unease.
Yeah.
And actually, I was going to link to Human Transit's blog.
Oh, yeah.
He talks a little bit more on the different angles that this microtransit movement affects.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Especially in the realm of those in, more poorer financial situations.
Right.
And those with disabilities.
Sure.
Yeah. The microtransit movement is, at this point, mostly private. And therefore, like, not subject to the same rules as, like, city transit is.
Yeah.
And
so it's like, if you've got a ton of money, you can call for a ride anytime.
Right, right.
If you don't have any money.
If you have the means and the access, two things that people with disabilities and people who are in lower financial situations don't have, then you can take advantage of this whole microtransit thing and not have to ride with the plebs on the bus.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's kind of like that. I don't remember who it was. There was someone tweeted about this San Francisco like bus company that was basically replacing public transit for like essentially.
Wasn't it Google employees, right? Or Facebook or something?
I think it was
that's part of the whole microtransit system. They mentioned like the Google Transit or whatever as part
really?
Of this. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, it was the one, it was like, you know, it's so easy, anybody can do it. But it was like a picture of like a really fancy bus with like a wooden back wall and everything a dude looking at a smartphone.
The picture on this article is hilarious.
Right.
Because it's like, yeah, you got this sort of double wide van or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's people like in these really comfortable seats on one side, and on another side they have like this sort of like desk where people are like typing on their on their laptops. And then in the back, there's like sort of this U-shaped booth where people are like talking and having a good time.
And drinking beers.
And no, you can't do that on the microtransit.
Okay.
But in the meantime, only two people of color in the entire picture.
Well, yeah, so there,
and
there's
they're
that
both
consideration.
In the back. They're both in the back.
There's that consideration. There's like the implications of what does this mean, like financially, and like who has like that access in our culture. And then there's also just the idea that like not everybody owns a smartphone. Not everybody right. can afford $5 a pop for a fancy ride somewhere. So.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and again, like if you say you have access and you have financial ability, but you have limitations to said access or whatever, you know, say you have a disability where you can't just like walk in the door of a van.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, this is basically the same services that other transit is providing. Like you said, like microtransit is nothing new. They're just calling it something different and using new technology. So yeah. It's like we really need to push hard to get the folks that are, you know, masquerading under this like, you know, new technology to get away with cutting corners and not providing
yes.
stuff for everybody. But I think it also is a good lesson for like municipalities.
Larger
transit that people want have more on-demand transit. Like I don't know how easy it is to call for, you know, a Lyft vehicle or something. I don't know that information, but if it was as slick as an Uber app or something like that, you know, maybe more people would have access to it. And actually TriMet, to their credit, has the app that you can buy fares on and stuff. So
that's true.
Like getting more
better.
Tools out, they're getting better, but you know, it's but then again, still, you don't reach the people. That can't be the only way you do things, because you can't reach people that don't have smartphones.
Yeah. And like any industry, I think the best thing that that all this microtransit stuff has done is to kind of it's a bit of a kick in the ass to the traditional service providers to say, well, we have to make this like more convenient for people, as opposed to like stand by this pole in some field and hope that a bus shows up at least once an hour.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. People aren't picky on like necessarily what cab company shows up, but wouldn't it be great if you could hit a button on your phone and have a cab company or like a
right.
cab show up.
What if there was a God mode in which you could just look at the map and find out where that vehicle that was coming to get you was?
Right. Yeah. No. Just confirm that it's on the way.
It's pretty. That's not possible.
Yeah.
Actually, it is now.
Oh. Well, it is. Yeah. Yeah. It'll take time.
So what else we got?
Oh, what else? I was like so lost on ranting. From the
that
Willamette,
was an appropriate sound for this
yeah,
next story,
good.
Right?
From the Willamette Week, Portland's last affordable bike neighborhoods. Have you read this article,
I
by
have
the
not,
way?
No.
Oh, really? It's all right. It's pretty good for what they sought
okay.
to do.
Okay. My Willamette Week reading foo is weak.
Do you need foo?
I don't have enough time.
I think it's pho.
Oh, excuse me.
Anyway.
But boy, is it tasty.
Portland's last affordable bike neighborhoods. Portland has long been thought of as a cycling mecca for one big reason. Affordable homes were close enough to work to commute by bike. Housing prices rose by another 6.6% last year, and a February project by the Governing Magazine
for those who like to govern
found the city is gentrifying faster than anywhere else in the nation. Does the promise of an affordable, bikeable Portland still hold up?
It's getting harder.
What do you think?
Two reasons why I'm optimistic about this.
Yes.
Because actually I think that East Portland is a lot better to bike around than people give it credit for.
And like, better than West.
Yeah, totally.
Oh,
I mean,
hell yeah.
So I think that probably no surprise, I don't put a lot of stock in these bikeability ratings. So yeah, some of them are kind of hooey. But so I think it's actually, there are some neighborhoods that just don't show up on the bikeability rating that are still affordable. And I think there are some pockets of neighborhoods that are more affordable than other pieces of the neighborhood. You know, you can look at, like I live in Brooklyn. I live closer to the train tracks. It's a lot cheaper by the train tracks than it is in other parts of Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So we're not, like, if you look at our average price for the neighborhood, it's kind of high, but I know that there's some cheaper houses in that neighborhood. So there's still little pockets. It's definitely getting harder. Like, I don't know anybody when they move, if they're changing apartments or buying a house, they're not moving closer to the city usually, right?
Not usually.
No. Often further away. Like, but I think that it's better.
Yeah.
Like, I like riding in East Portland better than downtown.
And Bike Portland actually did a pretty good review of this review.
Yeah. That was really great.
Basically stating, like,
it was incredibly meta.
It was pretty. And now we're reviewing that review.
I should make an infographic about this review of that review of the review of the housing market.
Oh, shit. Where's my Inception sound? It's gone. Oh, well.
Oh, no.
Blah.
All right.
But anyways, they mentioned, like, you know, sort of some of the fallacies or some of the assumptions that this article took that aren't necessarily true. However, like, I think it was good of Willamette Week to bring this up.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially to point out, if nothing else, that we're gentrifying faster than any other city in the nation.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we really, a lot of us don't like to talk about, but we really need to keep in mind.
Yes. It's happening very quickly.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You had a point.
I was just going to finish the rest of this article so everybody knows out there what the most bikeable or the last bikeable.
What are the last bikeable neighborhoods in short?
In short, well, first is Foster Powell.
Mm. Yeah.
Just don't call it FOPO. That sounds bad.
That sounds really bad.
I've never heard that before.
Oh, really?
I'm a little upset that you made that.
Are you serious? You've
really?
Never
heard
no, that? I've never heard FOPO before.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's a thing people are saying, and it's kind of. Right. I think it's dumb.
All right.
It's fine. You say it if you want to. It's just I how I feel.
Other two, Woodstock and South Tabor.
Oh yeah.
And they say, however, South Tabor is the better value for bikers, as living there shaves 12 minutes and nearly 3 miles from your daily commute.
So if you don't like burning calories,
with the assumption
and
that
shape.
Your daily commute takes you downtown.
That's See, true. Again, that's a really fascinating assumption,
right?
Because it is very different if you're going up to anything along the river or something.
Like, that's right. Yeah. Like I do.
Columbia, I mean. Like, yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. The other river.
It is fascinating how everyone always assumes that everybody works in downtown.
Right.
And how that everybody doesn't
least,
actually include everybody.
It's at least a good starting point because,
sure.
you know, much of the city's commerce is in the city center.
Yeah, but I've also heard Portland called a suburb of Hillsboro because there's so many people who live here and go up that way, right?
That's like, true.
So
yeah.
we
That's
live
true.
In a weird city of neighborhoods where a lot of people go in between different ways. Like, I don't think that we have as strong of an ebb and flow into and out of an urban core as some cities do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, like we have a it's a bedroom community.
Yeah.
It's a really fancy, sexy bedroom with, like, satin sheets and, like, you know, awesome, like, wood wardrobes and whatnot.
Yeah.
And the carpet is clean, but it's still a bedroom community.
Sure.
Okay.
I don't really know where you're going with this.
I don't know. It's
but...
a thought experiment. It's just,
All right.
Yeah, just thinking about, like, Portland maybe isn't, like, the primary destination. Maybe, like, the tech industry in Hillsboro could be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big pull, too.
Right.
I mean, there's thousands of people that go
Or the paper industry in Camas.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. There's a lot of people that commute out to Clackamas County out south. And,
Yeah.
I shouldn't say out south. South.
Down south.
Yeah.
Up south. Down north.
Yeah.
Can I issue just a really short call to action?
Hit me.
All right. It's like multiple part thing.
Don't move here.
Number one, go home. Number two, don't despair when the neighborhoods you like fall apart because there will be new other neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So like I will go to Club 21 until it closes and then I will have to say those were good days.
And
number
then you'll
three,
find a new bar.
Number three, if you're entrepreneurial, find a place that needs a cool neighborhood bar and open one.
Amen.
Or whatever else, you know.
Yeah.
Let's stop idolizing all these cool neighborhoods. Because you know
and
what?
Be a cool neighborhood.
Go to Hawthorne Boulevard. Anytime in the last 10 years, that place is a shithole.
Yeah,
there's nothing fun to do there anymore.
It's different.
Yeah.
Than it used to be.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I don't remember if this was on
Says
last
the old
week's.
Cranky man.
Yeah.
Damn kids.
Get off my lawn.
I don't know if this was on last week's podcast when we had Betsy interviewing.
Uh-huh.
But we were hanging out. Oh, no. This because it was.
This was off record.
This was later. No, this was later after her.
The red light
the
just
podcast.
Means it's on, not recording.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyways, we took her down Hawthorne, you know, because, you know.
Just to do
it's
it.
At least, you know, if you have people from outside of Portland. It's a good way to, like, sort of acclimate them or, like, show them.
It's like a decompression tank.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
just what I was like, thinking.
Yeah.
So they don't get the cultural bends.
The bends.
Right, right.
Here's
it's
a sample
funny,
of what we will
like
be tasting
we,
this weekend.
We got to Blue Star Donuts, like, got a donut, came out, and, like,
I went
just
there for
walked.
The first time today.
It's delicious.
Oh, my God. Mm. Changed my life.
Pretty good?
Oh, very good.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry to sidetrack. But
it's
I,
a little
no, it's
too
good.
Clean for my taste, but
yeah.
it's delicious.
But
the donuts were amazing, though. Like, I don't care. anyway,
but
sorry.
Anyways,
back to,
no,
yeah,
no,
so you
right.
went to Blue Star
so,
Donuts.
Yeah, and we're walking around, and she goes, boy, people sure really work hard on their outfits here.
Yeah, they do. Yep.
And that's Portland.
And that's the point. Hey, real quick, do you mind if I roll through this mail?
Yeah.
All right, you know what we got?
We got mail.
Yeah, we do. Josh Guttmacher from the other episode says, yes, Thousand Island dressing probably has roots in the Thousand Islands. There's a Wikipedia article
and
about
I
that.
And I read that article.
It's pretty awesome.
The whole way.
Wow.
Peanut Butter Jar Matt says that there's a sad 9% fare hike from New Jersey Transit. And I'm sorry, Matt. It sounds that's too bad. At some point, hopefully people will recognize the value of commuting together in cool, awesome square vehicles. Speaking of sales on bikes, Johnny K found the Taro Sail bike. It's like a Tarasaurus, but it's a bike. It's a trike, actually. So, yeah, it's got sails, and it's a trike, so it wouldn't fall over, which is kind of the concern
fantastic.
That we were trying to figure out the other day. Yeah. Brian Benson signaled the river, let me start over. Brian Benson's project, the River Signal, is up. So we talked about
that at riversignal.com.
Riversignal.com. Yeah, this is his serialized podcast. It's going to be part fact, part fiction. And they're doing it on an old, like paddle wheeler, steamboat. So that's
fantastic.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Oh, it's really exciting. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Boat month. It might just be boat month every month.
And then
Logan, our good friend Logan from down south, sent us a New York Times article. Cargo bikes are the new cars. And I will take every one of these articles that is being written because more people need to hear this.
Yes. Yes.
The more cultural cachet, the more swag that this idea has, the more people are going to do it. And that's a good thing. So, all right, ready to wrap this thing up?
Sure.
All right, Will, thank you so much for all the beer.
Well, cheers. Thanks.
Really
for
appreciate
having me.
That.
Yeah, fantastic.
And thank you, the beer mongers, for the beer that we will drink later.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, you got the list over there, right?
I do.
Okay.
And I dropped my thing.
Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text 250-384-7974.
And really leave us a voicemail. It'd be awesome. Twitter @sprocketpodcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Hurt Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K., Shadowfoot,
Katrina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lean, Richard Wazinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan, and Chris Gonzalez. These people are in the first set. They're old school. We love them. Hey.
Thank you so much.
Go brush your teeth.
Go to bed.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry that upset you so much. I feel bad because I was involved, you know, a little bit. But,
oh, really?
You know, well, no, I mean, they were mocking my Twitter account, somewhat, you know.
Yeah,
responsible for that being in the world.
The real Van Lu was extremely offensive to Mr. Flores.
Oh, man.
Much like the U.S. political
system. Sorry, hang on just a minute. I need to do a thing.
We broke something. Much like the U.S. political system, we broke something.
Well, podcasts are so hot right now.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
I guess so.
And they're free.
You wanna play me in one more time?
No. Do you need it for the energy?
A little bit.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Sure. Yeah. Here it comes.
I like that song.
Oh.
I like that one too.
Classic joke.
Gotcha.
Oh yeah.
Do you want some of my coffee?
Editing, man. Editing is great.
You are listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.